Well, I will give just a briefly introduction to some terminology and basic results about semi-simple Hopf algebras, mainly over a field, really over the complex numbers, and fusion categories. So let's start. So I will assume in all the talk that I will work over the field of the complex numbers. You can do in a mass, in a most general case, but doesn't matter. Even you can define Hopf algebras in any braided category if you want, but for simplicity, just think in this case. As you know, an associative algebra is just a vector space with a multiplication and a unit, and it has to satisfy the associativity and the co-unit that you can rewrite using these diagrams. The first notion that I need is the reverse notion that it's a co-algebra. So you change the order of your arrows, and now you have a co-multiplication and a co-unit, and it has to satisfy the co-associativity that is just change the order of your arrows, and the co-unit also is to change the order of your arrows. So, okay, what is a Hopf algebra? Well, a Hopf algebra is a vector space that has two structures, an algebra structure and a co-algebra structure. And you need, of course, some compatibility. The first thing is that this delta and this epsilon are algebra maps. And the second one is the existence of an antipode. That is a map from H to H such that this equation holds. I mean, this diagram holds. If you take an element in your algebra, in your Hopf algebra, apply the co-multiplication, and then you apply the antipode to one of the sides, and then multiply, that's exactly the same to apply the co-unit and then the unit. And we will see in a moment. Okay, the basic examples. Maybe the simplest example is the algebra functions over a group. Well, in this case, to do things easier over a finite group. So the multiplication is just the usual multiplication, so that is a commutative algebra. And the co-multiplication is given using the following. You can identify the tensor product of H with all functions over G times G. And then if you apply the co-multiplication, the function evaluated in X and Y is just the value, the number is just F of XY. Okay, the unit, the co-unit is just the value in the identity, and the antipode is precomposed with the embers of your algebra. Other example is the group algebra. The group algebra, the co-multiplication is given just by this formula, and the same for co-unit and antipode. Okay, that's like two basic, very basic examples of Hopf algebras. Well, when we are working with Hopf algebras, in many cases we need to deal with the co-multiplication, and it's necessary to work with some notation that people call Swidler's notation of sigma notation. Okay. So you also can work, if you want, only with the maps, but for some proofs, only work with the maps could be a little complicated. So in many cases, it's easy to work with this notation. So the idea is the following. Delta, it's an element inside of here. So of course, can be written in this way. It's a sum of some pure tensor products. But the usual way to write is just you write C1 and C2, or really you forget about this sigma, this summation, and you only write C1 tensor C2. That's the typical way to write. So for example, if you have the co-associativity, remember that this side has to be the same of this side. Using this Swidler notation, translate to write this equation. And because both sides are exactly the same, usually you write x1, x2, x3. That's the typical thing. And if you apply again the co-multiplication to one of these sides, for example, to x1, then you write this element at c1, c2, c3, c4, and the same in general. So for example, how to rewrite the axioms of Hopf algebra using this notation? Okay, well, the co-unit writes only as the following: epsilon of x1, x2 is equal to x. That delta is an algebra map, writes at x1, 1, x2, 2, equal to this. And the action of the antipode is this. You apply the multiplication first, then you apply the antipode, multiply, and you get epsilon by the 1. Some basic invariants for Hofvalderer is the group likes, and it is always a group, really a group, and the primitive elements that are all elements that satisfy this equation, and this is a Lie algebra using as a bracket the commutator. I mean, the bracket of x and y is xy minus yx, and you get a Lie algebra inside. Okay, so I need to this map, the flip map, that is usual flip map. And you have then the notion of commutative algebra, that is the usual notion. And Hof algebra is commutative if it is commutative as an algebra, xy equal to yx. And dual, you have that a co-algebra is co-commutative, x1 is tensor, x2 is equal to x2, x1. And one of the very few, really, theorems of a structure of Hof algebras is this theorem of Cartier and Constant that says that any co-commutative Hof algebra over an algebraic closed field of characteristic zero, or the complex number if you want, has this form. I mean, it's completely, the invariance contains all the information of your Hof algebra. So you have a complete classification. This is the enveloping algebra of a Lie algebra, and this is the group algebra. In this case, G can be infinite. I mean, it doesn't have to be a finite group. Okay? So you have this. Other way to construct Hof algebras. If you have a finite dimensional Hof algebra, then the dual is again a Hof algebra. Why? Remember that the action was really symmetric. This looks like this, and look that this looks like this. So if you apply the dual, this is a contravariant functor, so you change everything, and you get exactly the same structure, even in the antipode, in the multiplication, and the co-multiplication. So you have that every finite dimensional Hof algebra, his dual is commutative. So in particular, for example, every finite dimensional, commutative, I forgot the word commutative, Hof algebra, has therefore the algebra functions over a group. Because you know by the other theorem that co-commutative Hof algebras are group algebras, so the dual is this algebra functions. Okay, so commutative and co-commutative Hof algebras are not so interesting, or really they are interesting because they are finite groups. But we would like to have other examples of things that are not commutative or not co-commutative, so maybe they are not related directly with groups. Okay, so perhaps one of the most important constructions here in Hof algebra theory is the Drinfeld quantum double. So the Drinfeld quantum double is a method to construct Hof algebras that in general won't be commutative or co-commutative from a specific Hof algebra. So, but this quantum double, this new Hof algebra, is not just a Hof algebra. It has an additional structure that is quite important. And this additional structure is called a quasi-triangular structure. So a quasi-triangular structure, or just an R matrix, for a Hof algebra, it's an invertible element here that satisfies some equations. This equation, remember the tau is the flip map, and satisfies those equations. So a quasi-triangular Hof algebra will be just a Hof algebra with an R matrix. We will see in a moment what is the categorical meaning of this notion. Okay, so the quantum double of a Hof algebra is a new Hof algebra that you construct in the following way. As a co-algebra, so you start with a finite dimensional Hof algebra. As a co-algebra, it's just the tensor product of H with the dual, but you have to switch the co-multiplication. I mean, it's the opposite co-multiplication as a co-algebra. And because it, this space lives inside of this, and this space lives inside of this. This inclusion is, those inclusions are as a Hopf algebras. So you have two copies of your Hopf algebras inside, and the multiplication is given by this formula that looks complicated, but well, it is the multiplication. And you can think, oh, how you can see that this is really the multiplication that you need. Well, we will see in a moment how this multiplication appears in a natural way. And it look that there is a canonical element here inside. That is, if you fix a basis and a dual basis, then this element is a canonical element inside of this algebra or this vector space. And the idea is that this is hermetic. So this element satisfies for this Hopf algebra all these equations. And this is a very important example. Okay, another notion that is important for Hopf algebra theory, it's the notion of integral. So an integral, or the space of integrals, are all elements in your algebra that satisfy this equation. If you multiply any element by this h, you get epsilon of h by your element x, and the same in the other case. So for example, if you start with a group, maybe it's possible that it's not necessarily a finite group, and you can see your group algebra as the dual of the algebra of functions over your group. So you can think that the elements of this Hopf algebra are like the space of distribution on H. So in that sense, when you look, integrals are just invariant measures. Okay. For the finite dimensional case, an integral for the dual, it's something that satisfies this equation. Some people call directly this Haar, well, with some additional structures, a Haar measure for Hopf algebras. And the last example, if you consider the group algebra, the space of integrals are just one-dimensional, and this is a basis of this space. It's the sum over all elements in your basis. Well, this is other classical result in Hopf algebra theory. If you have a finite dimensional Hopf algebra, then always the space of integrals is one-dimensional. And the antipode is bijective. That's also a very important part. And you can go from left integrals to right integrals using the antipode and, of course, backwards. So, but we are interested in semi-simple Hopf algebras, not in any Hopf algebra. So I will focus on semi-simple Hopf algebras. For me, a semi-simple Hopf algebra is just an algebra, a Hopf algebra such that the algebra is semi-simple in the sense that every module is completely reducible. I mean, you can see in many different ways, like the Jacobson radical is zero, or that it's isomorphic to a product of matrix algebras. There are many. And other result is that a Hopf algebra is semi-simple if and only if there exists an integral such that the co-unit of this integral is non-zero. So for example, the classical Mach-Key theorem says the following. If you consider the group algebra, remember that an integral is given by this element. So the group algebra is semi-simple if and only if the order of your group doesn't divide the characteristic of the characteristic of your field doesn't divide the order of your group. So in that sense, it's a generalization of the classical Mach-Key theorem. And the other characterization of semi-simple Hopf algebras is every semi-simple Hopf algebra is involutive. Involutive, that means that the square of the antipode is the identity. So you get that every semi-simple Hopf algebra, a Hopf algebra is semi-simple if and only if this happens, and if and only if the dual is a semi-simple Hopf algebra. Then you get the following. If you have a Hopf algebra and you look at a Hopf subalgebra, this is again semi-simple because the square of the antipode is still the identity. And the same by duality with quotients. So quotients and subalgebras, Hopf subalgebras, are semi-simples if you start with a semi-simple Hopf algebra. And that's important, of course. And the other thing is that the Drinfeld double, the quantum double of a semi-simple Hopf algebra is also semi-simple. Yes, because as a coalgebra, this is just the tensor product of two semi-simple coalgebras. So it's semi-simple. So let's see how to construct. In general, it's hard, or it's not simple to construct examples of Hopf algebras. I mean, of non-commutative and non-co-commutative Hopf algebras. There are very few constructions, really. And there are very few examples, in some sense. So it seems a little technical. But the thing is, associated with some group theoretical data, you can construct some semi-simple Hopf algebras. The idea is the following. There is a notion of matched pair. Matched pair, in some sense, is just a factorization of a group. So you have a big group with two groups inside, such that every element of your group can be written as a product of two elements in each of the groups, and the intersection is trivial. If you have that, you can construct this stuff that is called matched pair, that is just two actions with some compatibilities, but it is a very, I mean, natural notion. It's just associated with factorizations of groups. And you also need some cohomological data that I'm reading here quickly, but it is just an element in some specific group cohomology. Some group cohomology related with matched pairs. It's really group cohomology. So really you can compute for concrete example. It's not just a bunch of equations. So the idea is, if you have this, then you can construct a Hopf algebra that some people call B cross product or an abelian extension over this vector space. This is the algebra of functions over your group G, and it has as a basis all delta functions. And this is your group algebra, and it has a basis the element of your group. So the multiplication is given by this formula, where here, delta is the Kronecker's delta, and the co-multiplication is given by this formula. Okay? So that's a way to construct example. And for example, the Drinfeld double of a finite group can be obtained using this construction. If G is equal to F, one of the actions is trivial, and the other action is given by conjugation, you get exactly without twist here. The Drinfeld double without twist. The Drinfeld double of a group algebra. And for some specific examples of groups, you get something like called the Kaczy-Paluski group algebra, that it's perhaps the first examples of a non-commutative and non-co-commutative semi-simple Hopf algebra. And it's related with the notion of Katz algebra that appear in operator algebra. So it is an important historical example, I mean. Yes?
Does this construction have a topological field theory interpretation?
What?
This construction.
Topological field theory interpretation. No, I don't see the direct relation. No. I can explain a little bit a more categorical interpretation of this in a second. Okay, another way to construct that Hopf algebra is twisting or deforming the co-multiplication or demultiplication. You can do in both ways. So the idea is you will change a little bit your co-multiplication using an element in an invertible element here. So it element has to satisfy some two co-cycle condition and some condition of some extra condition. And the idea is that you construct a new Hopf algebra that as an algebra is exactly the same, but the multiplication is changed using this. And in many cases, for example, if you start with a group algebra, this new Hopf algebra is not commutative and not co-commutative. So it's a typical way to construct Hopf algebra. It's some people call Drinfeld twist to these kind of things, because it was an idea of Drinfeld how to construct this kind of objects. For example, in the case of group algebra, there is a classification of all possible twistings using group theoretical data again. Look, that all examples that I have present are closely related with groups. Okay, but to study, I think nowadays, to study the Hopf algebra using the algebra, it's like old-fashioned. Now people study more the representation theory. That's the way to construct and to classify Hopf algebras nowadays. So remember that we have this co-multiplication. So if you have two modules, suppose that you have this module and this module, over the tensor product, you can obtain a new structure of module. How? Well, take this algebra map, then, because you have this module structure, you can apply here, and there is a natural algebra morphism from here to here. So with this, you obtain an H model structure. And the thing is that canonical isomorphism of vector spaces is an H model. Oh, an H model map. Also, using the co-unit, your vector space has a canonical structure of module such that these isomorphisms are H model isomorphisms. And the dual of a module using the antipod will have a module structure in such a way that the evaluation map and the co-evaluation map both are H module maps. So that you get here really is a tensor category structure over the representation, or at least over the finite dimensional representations of your Hopf algebra. Okay, so let me recall the long definition. Well, it's not long. It's the definition of a monoidal category or a tensor category. So, for me, a tensor category, this is a notion of given by MacLane. You know, I think in the 50s. So, a tensor category is a category denoted by C. A bifuncture, so it's something that if you have two objects, you can associate one object. If you have two arrows, you can associate two arrows and satisfy some equations. And you need an isomorphism, a natural isomorphism, that is like an associativity constraint. And this associativity constraint has to satisfy this Pentagon equation. This Pentagon equation has a specific meaning that mostly said that every category monoidal category is equivalent to some other category where these isomorphisms are the identity. Or you can give many interpretations of this. And finally, the action of the unit is the following. If you fix your object one, this functor and this functor are isomorphic to the identity functor. You can rewrite using something called the triangular axioms, but this is equivalent to this definition. And for technical reasons, I need that my categories have to be rigid. That's something important for the Hopf algebra structure. So a right dual of an object is just a pair of another object and an evaluation and co-evaluation map such that these equations, these compositions are the identities. So it's similar, like in the category of finite dimensional vector space, to the equation that satisfies the usual evaluation and co-evaluation maps. Our example to have in mind is the category of representations, of finite dimensional representations of Hopf algebra. To be compact, yes. Well, if you will have internal homes using this notion. Okay, and for Hopf algebra will be important. The existence or to be rigid will be in some sense equivalent to the existence of the antipode. That's the point. Okay, now the second ingredient, that is the notion of fusion category. So a fusion category will be a linear semi-simple category with finitely many simple objects, and such that the unit object is simple. And again, to have in mind, our example will be the category of representations of a semi-simple Hopf algebra. Now the word semi-simple is important in this part. Because the algebra is semi-simple if the category of representation is semi-simple, in the sense that every module can be written as a direct sum of simple objects. And by simple, I mean an object that doesn't have any sub-object, or such that by the Schur theorem, the Schur lemma, that the endomorphisms of these objects are just the multiples of the identity. But not every example of fusion category came as the representation of a Hopf algebra. There is a huge family of families or examples of fusion categories not related at all with the Hopf algebra. It's a much general notion. For example, the modular categories, or the categories associated with quantum groups, or semi-simplifications of the category related with quantum groups. So there are some fusion categories that doesn't came from semi-simple Hopf algebras. It's a very interesting construction, and it's related with Chern-Simon theory, and it's really, really interesting, but I want to say too much about that. Okay, but you also can give a more concrete definition. Yeah.
So what is the dreamful center of a fusion category comes from Hopf algebra?
The dreamful center of what?
Of a fusion category which comes from Hopf algebra.
It's the dreamful center of the category. So there is another construction. In 1 second, I guess in the two slides, I will speak about that. Exactly. So you can give also, like a coordinate description of a fusion category, if you want. This is the ingredients in order to construct, just using linear algebra, if you want, a fusion category. It seems like a very abstract object, but really it's a very concrete object that you can find using your computer, for example. Well, more or less. Okay, so the idea is the following. Associated with every fusion category, you have a fusion algebra, or the fusion rules. So the idea is the following. You fix a set of representative of the isomorphism classes of your fusion category. And when you do the tensor product of two simple objects, it is not now a simple object. So it decomposes as a sum of some other simple objects. And these numbers that are just the dimension of these home spaces contains a lot of information of your fusion category. They are describing the fusion rules for the tensor product. But of course, this is not enough. I mean, these conditions are saying just, for example, that the product is associative, that one is the unit, and that this star is an involution. But of course, this is not enough. This is only part of the information. You need more information to really recover your fusion category. And one problem is, for example, given a specific fusion rules, there exists or not a modular category that realizes this problem. Some people call a categorification of the fusion rules. So how to describe the other data? Well, you can do the following. You can fix some isomorphisms from X tensor B to this. And then, the things that I want to do is to take the skeletal version of your category. So I will fix, because I fix some isomorphism classes, then this object that is just this object. Remember that this is isomorphic to this. Sorry, here C, this K has to be C. Sorry. So the idea is that you will find an automorphism from this object to this object. Both are the same, really. So in other words, let's call this vector space, write this vector space as using this notation, just to be a little smaller denotation. So associated with the associativity, you have an isomorphism from this space to this space. But using diffusion rules, you can rewrite this space as this space. And using diffusion rules for this, you can rewrite this space as this space. So the associativity is encoded in a isomorphism of vector spaces from this space to this space. And it has to satisfy the Pentagon action, that this MacLane action that rewrites now. It's not a pentagon, but almost a pentagon by this map, but it's just the switch map. Of course, this is a polynomial equation. And you can try, but it's not easy, of course, to solve. For example, if you fix a fusion rule, you can try to rewrite all the equations and try to put in the computer and solve it. But in most of the cases, you really cannot do it because it's too much equations, too much variables. Yeah, but in principle, it's just linear algebra. OK, so following this approach, let's try to describe some kind of fusion categories that appears in the semi-simple Hopf algebra theory a lot. And it's the notion of pointed fusion category. A fusion category is called pointed if every simple object is invertible. Invertible in the sense that there exists another object such that, I don't know, X tensor X dual is isomorphic to the identity. So in that case, the set of all isomorphism classes of simple objects is a group using the tensor product. And the F matrix or this associativity is just given by a function from 3 times your group to C star. I mean, this F matrix that I describe are just numbers. And the pentagon equation is just the usual 3 cocycle condition. In other words, associated with every group and a 3 cocycle, you get a fusion category that is a pointed fusion category. Other example, the Fibonacci theory. In this case, you have 2 objects, and the fusion rules are just the following. X squared is 1 plus X. In this case, you only need to describe 1 matrix, and the matrix is given by this, where phi this is the golden ratio, for example. Okay. But warning, not every fusion rule admits a set of solutions. I mean, not every fusion rule has a categorification. It's a constraint. A family of examples given by Victor Ostrich is the following. Suppose that you take again only these 2 simple objects, these labels, and you change, and instead of take 1 plus x, you take 1 plus kx, where k is any natural number. I don't know, 2, 3, whatever you want. And you try to solve it. Well, there is no solution for this, except if k is equal to 1. That's the only case. And even to prove this case is really hard. I mean, there are non-trivial ideas behind perhaps the simplest family of examples. OK, but we are interested in semi-simple Hopf algebras. So as I said, many of these categories cannot be realized as representation of Hopf algebra. So how to know what is the connection to semi-simple Hopf algebra? The things that you need to connect both theory is the notion of Tanaka and Kronig reconstruction and the notion of fiber functor. A fiber functor will be just a monoidal functor from your category to the category of vector spaces when you see as a monoidal category. In other words, you have a functor that I will also ask to be exact and faithful that satisfies some coherent Yes, that is just that, some coherence. And the typical example is, again, you start with a Hopf algebra, and then you take the forgetful functor. The forgetful functor is just, you forget the action of your algebra, and you only see as a vector space. And this is a fiber functor. And look, for example, if you take this semi-simple Hopf algebras, it admits a fiber functor if and only if the cohomology class of your Trico cycle is trivial. In other words, many of these fusion categories cannot realize as the representation of any semi-simple Hopf algebras. They can be realized as a other object that is called a quasi-Hopf algebra, but they are not the representations of any Hopf algebra. And the Tanaka Cray reconstruction theorem says the following. If you have a tensor category with a fiber functor, there exists a unique Hopf algebra associated. It's the Cohen, some categorical construction, such that F factorized through an equivalence of category, and in some sense, your forgetful functor is just really the fiber. I mean, your fiber functor is just, in some sense, your forgetful functor. Look that here, I am putting co-rep and not rep, because really the theorem is not using the representation. I mean, in the most general version, you don't use the representation theory of your category. You use the co-modules over your category. But for example, if you work with semi-simple with fusion categories, you can assume that here is representations. And it works well in this case. You need some control over the dual. That's the point. And this kind of theorem has a long history that really I don't know the whole history. But I know that Saavedra, that was a student of Grothendieck, he wrote his thesis about the reconstruction of these kind of things, but for algebraic groups, and pro-algebraic groups. And then Delin and Milne writes a very nice paper with a lot of like corrections and other things. And Ulbricht, I think, was the first one that gives this version in a more general setting. I mean, in a non-commutative setting. Example, let me show you one example. If you take a twist of your Hopf algebra, remember this element that you can change the co-multiplication and get a new Hopf algebra? Well, take the forgetful functor. Then using this twist, you can give a new structure of forgetful functor. I mean, as a functor, it's exactly the same, but the natural isomorphism connecting. Remember that a fiber functor is not just a functor. You need a family of natural isomorphisms here. So you change the natural isomorphism using this twist, and you get a new fiber functor. If you apply the reconstruction theorem, the Hopf algebra that you get is exactly the twist in deformation. So in other words, the representation theory of your algebra H and the representation theory of your twisting is exactly the same as tensor categories, even when the algebra looks different. And in the other direction also is true. If you have two finite dimensional Hopf algebra that have exactly the same representation theory as a tensor category, there exists a twist connecting both. Okay? That's perhaps the last family of examples that I will present, and it's called group theoretical semisimple Hopf algebra, and this is a huge family of semisimple Hopf algebras. So the idea is to apply reconstruction theory to some specific family of fusion categories. So take a Trico cycle, a group and a Trico cycle, and let's C, G, omega, B, the pointed fusion category, I mean, that I described. If you have a subgroup and a two cochain, I mean, it's just a map from G times G to C star that satisfies this equation, where D is the usual differential map in group cohomology. Then the twisted group algebra, it's an algebra inside of this pointed fusion category, and you can consider the category of bimodules. And this category of bimodules inside is a fusion category. So these kind of fusion categories are called group theoretical fusion categories, because you only need some group theoretical data to describe it. And the thing is, there is a classification of all, in pure group theoretical terms, of all possible fiber functions of these categories, given by Victor Ostrich. But the classification goes really he classifies some a big family of objects called module categories. Fiber functor corresponds to module categories or rank one, something special. But he did something a little more general. And these Hopf algebras are called group theoretical. Look, all examples that I present are in this family. Because, I don't know, if you take some specific data, you get the representations of your group. If you have a match pair, you take your other data, you get the representation of this Hopf algebra that I present. And for a while, it was an important question in the theory if there exists something else. Dmitry Nikshich, he constructs another kind of Hopf algebra, but it's not too much different to these kind of examples. And he called these kind of things weakly group theoretical Hopf algebras and fusion categories. Now, let's try to see this Drinfeld center and the connection of the quantum double with this Drinfeld center. So if you have a tensor category, you can construct a new there is a notion of braiding in a category. So it's an additional structure similar like when you have this Hopf algebra and this R matrix that I described. And a braided tensor category is just a tensor category without braiding. The typical example, as I said, is the category of representations of a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. Using this R, you can define an isomorphism for B tensor W to W tensor B using this formula. You apply this element and then you switch. And conversely, every braiding over the representation of a finite dimensional Hopf algebra came from an R matrix. So in other words, quasi-triangular structure are the categorical part of braided tensor categories. And why we could be interested in these kind of things? Well, there are many, many things why. But one of them is related with representations of the braid group. So if you have your braid group, if you have a braided tensor category, there is a map from your braid over the braid group over the automorphisms of power, tensor powers of this object X given by this simple formula. Okay. Again, an example, if you take a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra and you apply this, this is a solution of the quantum Jahn-Baxter equation or the braid equation. So that was it. It was one of the motivation for Drinfeld to define and to construct the quantum double, because with every quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, you can construct a lot of solutions of the quantum Jahn-Baxter equation. And conversely, every solution of the quantum Jahn-Baxter equation, using a solution of the Jahn-Baxter equation, you can construct a Hopf algebra associated. Okay, so the Drinfeld center is a way to construct for any monoidal category a new category, but now this category is braided. And then the construction is in some sense very natural. The objects are just pairs of an object and a half braiding, so one isomorphism from X to tensor Y to Y tensor X. That satisfies some equation. It's half of the braiding conditions. And you can define the product and the braiding, so you get a braided fusion category. So for example, if you start with this pointed category, the center is the twisted is the representation of the twisted Drinfeld double or Tychraph-Witten theories. If you start with a semi-simple Hopf algebra, with a finite dimensional Hopf algebra, this category has a functor. So if you have a forgetful functor from your center to your category, and then you apply the original forgetful functor, so you can apply Tanaka reconstruction theorem. and the Hofalera that you get is exactly the Dreamfeld center. In other words, as a braided tensor category, the representation of the center is exactly the same as the representation of the Dreamfeld double, and that's a way to think about the twisted Dreamfeld double. Okay, you also can give, if you want, a description of braided fusion categories using linear algebra. So now you have to solve some more complicated equation, perhaps, but still, it's something that only uses linear algebra. For example, this Fibonacci theory has some structure. But look, this example, if you start again with pointed fusion categories, in order to have a braided structure, you need that your group has to be abelian. This is a condition. Because remember, A tensor B has to be isomorphic to B tensor A. So in this case, it has to be abelian. And this hexagon equation can be rewrite as some equations. But this equation has, again, a cohomological meaning. This is just some cocycle related with some specific cohomology related with MacLane spaces of some kind. And maybe for some of you, it's more common to listen about an anionic system, and there is like a dictionary between both theories. I mean, simple objects in this anion theory are called anions. Labels are called anion type. A tensor POG is fusion. I don't know, for example, the mapping class group. The evaluation and co-evaluation maps are called creation and annihilation maps. Associated with some specific kind of fusion categories, you have a TQFT, and the vector space associated is exactly the ground manifold of your Hamiltonian. There is an interesting connection between these theories. Well, in the last minute, I will present a little bit some of the things that I have been working in this stuff. And it's related with if you have some specific kind of fusion category that is called modular category, you have behind of this a TQFT. And associated with this TQFT, you have a model for quantum computing that Eric Rowell will explain us in his talk. But the point is, as a mathematical question appears, if this module, I mean, if this kind of computer is universal or not, that you can translate if certain image of the braid group is dense or not inside of some family of groups. So related with this, there is the property F that says that molar categories that are universal has very specific form. And this form is related with something that is called the quantum dimension of the category. If the quantum dimension of the category is an integer, we believe they are not universal. So in all examples that we know, this happened. And some results, Eric Rowell has many results related, but I only present this one. For twisted Dreamfeld doubles, the theory associated, in other words, for Dijkhoff-Witten theories, is not universal. If you try to take a bigger group, like any discrete group, also it won't be universal. And even if you try to use gapped boundaries, it won't be universal. Some other things are related, for example, with the notion of weakly group theoretical. And there is this is, I think, one of the most important conjectures of open problems in Hofalgebra theory, and it's if every semi-simple Hofalgebra is a weakly group theoretical fusion category. That means if the category of representation has a specific form that I cannot describe right now. But other conjecture is that every semi-simple Hofalgebra has a unique C star structure. I mean, and some results in this direction are given in joint work with Eric Rowell and Shen-Han Huang. that we proved this conjecture for weakly grouped theoretical fission categories. And also, I have been studying some unitary structure, because I didn't say it, but the unitary structure is really important for physical applications. We are not really interested just in a semi-simple category. We really are interested in unitary fission categories, because we need the Hilbert structure behind of all this. So there were some open some questions about what happened if you have that all these solutions of the pentagonal equation are unitary. It's possible that always the solutions of these hexagon equations are unitary, and the answer is yes, they are. And in some sense, it's very rigid, the unitary structure. You only have one unitary structure. Thanks.
So, we have some time for questions.
You showed this theorem about the Turnfeld-centered Tanaka reconstruction of that. Does that imply that, it seems to imply that an R matrix is unique if it exists? Is that true?
No, because the thing is, you start with a category, monoidal category, and then you construct a braided fusion category.
Right,
yeah. But over this category, you can have many different braided structures.
Yes.
So any different structure is a different R matrix if you are talking about Hofalda. Yeah.
So is that compatible with that reconstruction theorem?
Always is compatible, yes.
Yeah, because the Turnfeld center is unique, right? When you know the monoidal category without a braiding, it has a unique Turnfeld center, and then you get the quasi-triangular structure, so it's coming from that.
Yes.
But
the point is, if you start with a category, then you construct a braided category. Yeah? And this braided category, of course, has a unique braided structure related with that construction. But you can have many different, over that category, you can have many different braided structures.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have, I don't know, if you start with a Hofalda, you can have many different R matrices for this.
So the Hofalda shred that you get in the end is not related to the original one?
If you change your...
That's maybe better.
Okay.
So there were a bunch of different structures you talked about. Some of them seem to have classification theorems and some of them don't, is that right? Or basically none of them have classification theorems? What's the story?
All of them are related with representation theory, you said?
No, classification.
Classification.
Yeah, well...
In general, the typical way to attack classification is by dimensions. That's like the typical way. And in specific dimensions, yeah, but there are a lot of results related with classifications. And I think that the main tool in many cases is to go to the Triumphal double and then come back. Yeah, I don't know.
And so the semi-simple of algebras. You gave a number of examples. But that's the case where there's no general classification theorem?
No, there is not. Yeah, there is classification in some specific dimension. For example, P cube, P a prime number, or I don't know, dimension 24, but very, very specific dimensions. In general, there is not no. But this theorem about the conjecture is really not a classification. It's a characterization in some sense. I mean, it's okay. Maybe not. We don't know exactly how all possible semi-simple Hofaldias are, but we know how to construct all of them. That's the idea of this. Yeah, exactly. So it's at least a technique for the construction of.
And would that conjecture imply that there's lots more that are not known, basically, or?
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
So you said the representation category of Hof algebra is equivalent to the representation category of the twisted one if you apply the Driemann twist. But you also said that if the Hof algebra is acting on an algebra, you can apply the twist to also twist the algebra on which the Hof algebra is acting. So I don't see how it's not clear to me how the representation category of the two are the same.
When you change the co-multiplication, you said, or the...
So you can also twist the algebra with the same uniform twist.
Yeah, okay. If you twist the quadrilateral structure, you get the same representation. But if you change you twist your multiplication, you get another thing. Yeah, but this new thing has the same co-representation theory. I mean, because you are not moving now the quadrilateral structure. So they have but not only as an abelian category, I mean as a monoidal category, because the category of comodules, or in other words, the modules over your dual doesn't change. Yeah. So you can go in two steps if you want, in order to get something completely different. First, change the multiplication, and then change the co-multiplication. Then you get something that in some sense is not related with the first one. Okay. They have different representation theory and different co-representation theory, but you have to do it in two steps if you want to really change everything.
Natural interpretation of fusion categories is that they describe topological boundary conditions, topological fit theories in three dimensions.
Well, not fusion, modular.
No, fusion.
Okay.
Fusion categories describe the boundary condition. Because of Turay Viro, right? A fusion category can build a three-dimensional theory.
Okay,
because
yeah.
boundary is opposed to fusion categories. In that context, what do fadulas mean? Being representations of all fadula, is it the property of the boundary or the property of the ball, for example?
I really don't know. Yeah, maybe someone else knows more about that. No, I have no idea.
Perhaps I can say what,
yeah.
If you have a tensor category, then it is the representation category of all fiber functor that exists.
Right.
Tensor functors with vector spaces. So the question is whether the existence of such a functor has a TQFT interpretation. And I don't know.
No. Yeah, well, the only thing that I can say is the following. The TQFT is completely related with the twisted Drinfeld double, because every TQFT corresponds to a modular category. That is a special kind of fusion categories. So in this construction, when you start with the Turayev-Biro TQFT, there is a deep theorem of Turayev-Birassier that says that this theory is exactly the same as the Rejedikin-Turayev theory. And the Rejedikin-Turayev theory is associated with the Drinfeld double of your category. So in other words, that you can say this, look, if you start with that, then your twisted Drinfeld double will have a fiber functor. Okay, because as I explained, the double of your whole fadula will be the quantum double. So at least one condition that you need is that this modular category has a fiber functor. But this is not enough. It's not enough. Well, now remember that there are some conditions in a Mueger's in Michael works related with something that is called Lagrangian algebra. So yeah. But
it's sort of an orthogonal boundary condition, but what if you put them on a segment,
yes.
Something trivial, then this would be a fiber functor.
I don't know really a complete answer.
You mentioned your own thoughts if you look at brain of depth boundaries of Dijkhoffian theories, they are not universal.
Yes.
Now there's a natural question that how much is this generalized or not generalized to arbitrary. I said it's probably not true if you go to all fusion categories that have square dimensions, so it might be true for all categories that have the integer of dimensions, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, could be. Yeah. We don't know. We only did for this specific case of Dijkhoff-Witten theories. And yes, this is a really interesting question that in some sense is related with this other question, if weakly your theoretical has the property F, even in this case, it still is open, even without gapped boundary. I mean, even in this case, we don't know.